Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right? Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Having learned life lessons the hard way, Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. So tune in, turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Now, here's your host, Chuck Gallagher.
Hi, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. And, you know, there are times you sit back and you think about, if you're doing a radio show, what kind of show do you want to do and what would really create some unique and interesting controversy? And I think we've got a pretty good chance today that that will be the case. So I remember as a kid two things. Well, I remember more than two things. Let me just say that. Although, you know, at my age, remembering two things probably is in and of itself is okay. But I remember one time sitting in church many, many, many years ago, Southern Baptist Church, and I'll never forget, it was one of those Sunday night Bible studies. And okay, I'm going to out myself, but I'm sitting there like on the second or third row, and the minister that night was boring. And I'm so sad to say that, but I had to sing that night. So here I was having so much fun singing, but then I sat down for the message that evening and I started to drift off. And I don't know if you can, especially on radio, kind of catch this picture, but here I am and all of a sudden, you know, my eyes start walling back in my head and my head starts nodding, you know, uncontrollably, like it does on the airplane when it's a red eye flight. And I'm sitting there just nodding my head. And finally, I'm kind of in this space of being partially there and partially not. And I heard the minister say so clearly, well, at least there's one person that agrees with me here tonight. And I knew he was talking about me. So there are times that either the topic that you might get into when it's a religious conversation either will be incredibly boring or incredibly controversial. And now we've got more incredibly controversial because we're going to talk about the book of Revelation. Now, yes, you heard that. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about, as you're listening to this show, I want you to think that we're not going to have a show that will put you to sleep by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, we'll stretch your imaginations by talking with our guest, Bill and Cher Holton, both ministers. And Bill has just written a new book. The name of the book is The Book of Revelation, New Metaphysical Version. And I think what you're going to find in this show is that we're going to take some really difficult concepts to talk about and break them down into a way that actually will make sense and can apply in your life. I'm 57 years old. I've been in church for a number of years. And the one thing that has always been the profound problem is trying to talk about what does the book of Revelation mean? So, Bill and Cher, I am thrilled to have you back again as a guest here on Straight Talk Radio, and we're going to have straight talk about the book of Revelation. But I have to ask you on the front side, okay, so I know you've been in a corporate consulting business since 1984, and you created the Global Center for Spiritual Practices. So give us a little bit of a snapshot of where you are right now and what motivated you to take on such an interesting topic.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, one of the things we do in our profession and ministry is we certainly hope that we help people transform where they are to what they can be. And so we have a similar goal in our business that you do on your Transformational Talk Radio. So One of the things that prompted me to write this book as a minister is that it seems that the book of Revelation would be a culmination of your teachings, if you will.
Sure.
It's the last book in the New Testament, last book in the Bible, and we wanted to give people a perspective that was different from what most of us grew up with from the theology that we were taught as children. I always felt that there was more to the book of Revelation than what I was hearing, what I was studying in Bible class. And then, of course, when Sharon and I became Unity ministers and moved into Unity theology, I knew that there was very definitely a way to tell that story differently than what folks have heard before, and that would be from a metaphysical view. So let's share to tell you what we mean by a metaphysical view versus other lenses that people may tend to look at Revelation, and we'll look at life.
Yeah, one of the ways that we approach it is to look at what we call the field of infinite potential, which is some people use the word God, some people use divine energy, but it's this infinite field out there that is unlimitless. And within that field are all these little pockets of awareness. So we have a Baptist pocket of awareness, which is that perception and the lens through which they see things. We might have the Catholic version. We might have the atheist version. They're all different levels of awareness within this perspective. And our level of awareness is a metaphysical one, which means we look at things as if they're happening within us. So everything in the book of Revelation, for example, all those weird symbols that scare people to death, we interpret as these are things happening within us as we evolve in consciousness to become enlightened, if you will.
You know, when you think about what you just said, it's kind of like, and I've seen this, I see the vision of this, and I've seen it in movies, where there's the drop of water that you can see the whole ocean in, and it kind of is a visual symbol for the drop represents all of water. It's not changed. It's a function of where it happened, where the drop happens to be at a given point in time, but not the potential of what that drop is.
Right. And within that drop is the potential of the entire ocean.
Right.
And it's sort of like I like a wave even better than a drop, but the wave can't be a wave without the ocean, but the ocean can't be the ocean without the wave. And so there, and you can go get your bucket at the beach and capture a wave, but when you get it home, it's not a wave anymore. You know,
right.
It needs the beach to be a wave. It needs the ocean. And so we are the expression of that field of infinite potential.
And what's interesting, Chuck, is that this book is also written with scientific basis, too, so that it's not just a Fig Newton of Bill Holton's imagination as to what Revelation is saying, but a lot of what the interpretation is based on is sound science from quantum physics, from the neurosciences, from epigenetics, from biology. So all that is also incorporated in the interpretation of this last book.
Bill, let me go backwards for just a second. You probably do, but for most of us in the United States, for most of the listeners and most of us in the United States, we have been reared in what most would refer to it as a Christian nation. Not that we're not a homogeneous group of people, but fundamentally it has been a Christian nation. And so I guess the question begs, when you go back a long time ago to the actual physical formation of the Bible, Revelation has been the last chapter. Was it always the last chapter? And has there been and is there a difference between what a Methodist might see Revelation as versus a Baptist versus a Catholic?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say that because, it was adopted, if you will, as the last book to follow the canon, to follow Paul's writings, as sort of a last measure engineered to be a warning to us all that we've given you the teachings of Jesus. We've given you Paul's explanation and several other writers in the New Testament. And now this is a warning for you to pay attention. It's almost like a pointing the finger at you to say, you better pay attention or this is what's going to happen. And it was written as an end of days. As a matter of fact, there are different interpretations of Revelation. Some people believe, four viewpoints, I should say. One viewpoint is called a preterist viewpoint, which holds that Revelation outlines events which occurred in the first century, especially as they relate to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. Another one is a more historical perspective that asserts that Revelation identifies prominent world leaders as benevolent or the bad guys, if you will, as symbols to be dealt with in the coming days. Another view is called the futurist view, which positions Revelation as an end of days eschatological book of prophecy that occurs at the end of the world as we know it.
This is the one that makes for great movies.
Yes.
Right. I got you.
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, like a Mad Max kind of movie kind of thing going on. My view is a more metaphysical view, a more spiritual view, which takes the gloom and doom completely out of Revelation so that it differs radically, of course, from what you just said, what we've all grown up with. And it explains in more allegorical, metaphorical terms, and it implies that the places and people and events, the symbolism mentioned in Revelation are all traits and qualities and characteristics within each of us. So it takes an external focus, futuristic focus, and really brings it into the present, the now moment, as qualities within us.
You know, I can't wait for us to continue. We're pushing up on a break. The book is The Book of Revelation, New Metaphysical Version. Bill is the author. Bill and Cher are with me here today. They head up the Global Center for Spiritual Practices. I am thrilled to have you as my guest. Stick with us. When we get back, we're going to talk about some of those weird, odd things that are in Revelation and how we can actually make that better for us today. Stick with us on Straight Talk Radio. Bill and Cher Holton are my guest here on Straight Talk Radio. The Book of Revelation, New Metaphysical Version, is what we're talking about. And we started off talking about what the book has been to a lot of people. And Bill, you made the comment that, it was capping off the Bible at the end, kind of saying, okay, we've told you everything you need to know. Now you better watch out or bad stuff can happen to you. And I know that I have sat in many of a meeting, some in revival settings where, boy, you are preached at and preached to with Revelation and instilled the fear of God in you to act in a way that God would want you to act as perceived by the filters of those that are involved in that. So, take us on a journey. Now, supposedly, the book of Revelation was written by John the Apostle. I assume there's some controversy, but what's your take on that?
There is and continues to be. And the author identifies himself as John from Patmos. And what's interesting is that some scholars say that the author was, in fact, a Jewish Christian. Most likely from Ephesus, known as John the Elder, who lived during the reign of Emperor Domitian in 81 to 96-ish CE. His precise identity does remain unknown, however, And modern scholarship commonly refers to him as John of Patmos, as I mentioned. Revelation was probably written around 94-ish CE. And some people there are or some scholars or even believe that it wasn't a person named John at all. And so I'll leave that to the biblical scholars. Would not call myself a biblical scholar. I would certainly call myself a fan of Bible knowledge ramped up to its metaphysical level, which is the perspective, the lens I deal with when I read sacred literature. But I would place, after my 3 years of research writing this book, I would really place Revelation to follow the four Gospels, to follow John, which is where I think it should be, because it's not about end times at all. It's about the fulfillment, what happens to us when we take the teachings of, and you'll hear me say and share probably, the Christ as Jesus to heart and apply them. When you do that and become moved more towards your enlightenment, if you will, that's what I believe the book of Revelation is. It's a manual describing the process of our, in fact, becoming enlightened.
So let's take, Bill and Cher, let's take some of the symbols and concepts in the Bible. And I want to say, or in Revelation, well, in the Bible, but in Revelation in specific, some of these have just, either they have been ramped up to be very scary, or, you know, when you read it, it just isn't a nice little read. It's more a Stephen King kind of gig. I mean, you know, you kind of have to back off a little bit thinking, man, whatever this is talking about doesn't look pretty. So let's talk about the beast.
Okay.
So the beast is nothing more than our own ego, and from a metaphysical perspective. And it's the part of us that doesn't recognize the value of the truth of who we are. It's the part of us that denies that divinity within us. It's the part of us that's going after the material and focusing on that and kind of egging us on to want more and more and more. And so when you read about the beast in Revelation, that's how you can interpret it. That's a part of us that is kind of challenging us. It's the inner voice that pushes us to make some choices that aren't always wise.
How, that's really a fascinating comment. How do you reconcile the ego, which each of us have, as incarnate human beings? How do you reconcile the ego with really finding out the truth of our soul and who we are? How do those two things work together, or do they?
That's a great question, because some people believe the ego is bad. We don't take that perspective. It's just the ego that is not controlled. Like if the ego takes control of our thoughts, then that's not a good thing. But if we can use the ego in a positive way, what we want to do is merge our human self with our divine self. So that's enlightenment, that when we truly bring those together. And if I could take one more symbol from Revelation, the bottomless pit, which you often hear about in relationship with the beast, that bottomless pit is metaphysically where we are when we're in that place where we want more and more and more. So, you know, when people keep going, I'm going after this and I got this and I got this job and I bought this car, there must be more to life than this. And when you hear people saying that, there must be something more, they're in that bottomless pit experience. And the beast is taking over, pushing to want more from a material side, as opposed to looking at that spiritual depth within.
You know, the ego is that part of us, of our human personality, that is addicted to materialism, to worldliness, as opposed to spirituality and religion. And whenever you have a spiritual thought, you're really moving out of the ego, because you're subordinating the ego, which is a very earthy, worldly part of us, to a higher part of us, which is our spiritual self.
You know, it's interesting as you say that. I can connect with that. I mean, like, without any question, because what that did is it transformed me back to 1987, almost 30 years ago at this point, but it transformed me back to the young or mid to late 20s when it was all about the car, the house, the clothes, the shoes, the watch, anything external helped make you somebody.
Right.
And so the ego sought for the external trappings, and it did create a bottomless pit, because the reality was you kept digging and clamoring for the what I call stuff. Kids today might call it bling, whatever. But you, at least for me, I kept clamoring for the stuff until such point in time as the proverbial house of cards was pulled, and it was like, okay, you have made such poor choices trying to feed your ego that you have lost your identity with your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was what I would refer to as a dark night of the soul. And I think people can have them in different ways. But it's interesting to think about the ego as a beast. And I want to throw this question out to you. Now, it's a little weird, but dealing with those two things, the beast and the bottomless pit, I also look, and this is a judgment, therefore it may not be right at all, but I look at Bill Gates and I say to myself, well, here's a person that saw a concept and changed the world with the concept in terms of Microsoft, which is very earthly and very, tangible, so to speak. But yet the incredible wealth that it's created has allowed him to transcend beyond just being a business guy to literally trying to, bring an end to malaria and do a whole host of things with the wealth that he's received that the average person is not ever going to have the chance to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a great example of, it doesn't say you can't have wealth. It doesn't say don't have material things, but who controls what?
Does right.
your material things control you, which is where you're constantly going after more and more and more to bring me that peace? Or from a place of peace, do I create from this field of infinite potential, which allows me then to use it for good?
Right.
And I think you nailed it. And we all have the ability. It may not be at the level that we see Bill Gates doing it, but everybody has the ability to claim from that field of infinite potential the divine ideas that allow them to express.
And what's very interesting is Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and others are actually epitomize what Sarah and I would say, that you are wealthy in direct proportion to that what you can do without. They could amass immense material fortunes and possessions,
right,
if you will, but they opt out of that to help people.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We go back to the very first segment where we were talking about the ocean is the wave and you can capture it in a bucket. And the reality of all of that is each of us have the potential. Now, my potential may be reflected as a drop of water, but yet that drop of water to a small plant is just as significant as a gully washer might be to California at this point, and God knows they need that. It's fascinating to look at it from a different perspective, the book of Revelation. We have just a moment before we have to go to the break, and I literally mean just maybe a minute. Let's start with the four horsemen of the apocalypse, if that's even possible. Or maybe we need to hold that for the next, because we've only got a minute. I will say this. We'll hold it because I know there's just a minute. But I remember the movie Pale Rider with Clint Eastwood, and it was like the four horsemen, and it was a great movie. And yet at the same time, it was so symbolic of what people could get or what they were talking about or would have heard about. My guest today is Bill and Cher Holton. And we're talking about the book of Revelation. And I really do think that what you've been able to do with your book is something that's going to make a difference for everyone. So stick with us for just a second. We're on Straight Talk Radio. We're going to come back and talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse and the seven-headed dragon, if I can spit it out. Stick with me. We'll be right back. And this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and we are talking about the Book of Revelation, the new metaphysical version. Yes, the Book of Revelation from the Bible. And my guests are Bill and Cher Holton. Bill is the author of this book, and we've been talking about some of the symbols in Revelation and the scary things. And right before the break, I was going to break in with this, but I thought we'll just hold it to right now. Let's talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
And folks, we'll start with that. And I want to preempt the rest of Chuck's show because we're going to enter territory that a lot of folks have not heard the territory explained this way before. So we're going to ask you religious folks to keep an open mind and to by all means fasten your seatbelts.
Here we go.
Metaphysically, the white horse stands for our ability to defriend dogma. Climb out of the dogmatic box that you've probably been in for years. Keep dogma in its place. Beware of fossilized convention and tradition. Be willing to let go and release those concepts to move towards your spiritual, not necessarily religious, but spiritual good. That's what the white horse stands for.
Bill, let me ask you a quick question on dogma. Okay, you said it's the white horse is to release it. Why was it there to begin with? What did it serve?
The purpose, yeah. Wow, that's a whole show in itself. But good question, because a lot of folks love the dogmatic, and we're going to call it blinder. You put blinders on your consciousness, if you will, if you want to live in dogma. It's okay if you want to live in dogma. It's a place Cher and I have been. It's not a place that we continue to live in. As a matter of fact, we stay out of the dogmatic box. We look at it from a distance now. It developed because the religious powers that be, if you will, in any denomination, arrived at certain doctrinal beliefs, which are dogmatic and are supposed to be the end-all, be-all a knowledge concerning that particular concept. And the believers, the followers then, are expected to conform to those beliefs and not question those beliefs. And Cher and I say that one of the chief things we believe that interferes with your spiritual growth is not so much the unanswered questions, but the unquestioned answers. And dogma is one of those unquestioned answers that you need to grow out of.
And it's really designed for control more than anything. It's a good way to keep people in control.
You know, it's I want to get to the other horses. I promise I do. But the thing that really strikes me is if you went back a long, long time ago, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, the dogma was the earth was flat.
Right.
And if you challenged it, you'd be put to death. Until we found out it was wrong. And
right.
Now we look back and say, well, that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard in a long time. But at the time, that was the belief, and failure to follow the belief was wrong.
Right.
So the question today would be, how many things do we take as law and gospel? That's the way it is. Only to find out 1,000 years from now, people will look back at us and say, what dummies? Can you believe that?
Well, you know, that's one of the things we think that mainstream religion, fundamental religion, has but against science. Science should be a symbiotic relationship with religion, but science may tend to pull people out of the dogma that they believe in with new findings in science.
Right.
And so we think that that's why there's such a disconnect between science and religion.
Now, knowing we've got a short amount of time, let's talk about the other horses.
Okay, so let's do the red horse. The red horse really represents zeal and enthusiasm, but it's our ability to keep it in check. so that we get excited and we have this excitement about everything new that we're learning and as we're growing and becoming enlightened, but we don't let it run away with us. So the red horse is kind of controlled enthusiasm.
Okay.
Again, remember, coupled with, because we have to take all these four horses together. If you don't have all four there, it won't take you where you're going. And so we've got we're keeping dogma in its place and not letting it define us. And then we have the zeal and enthusiasm for what we're learning.
Okay.
The black horse metaphysically stands for making sound judgments or having proper discernment in your decision making. It's a very decisive kind of ability that we have, and again, we're just giving you a small snapshot of what these stand for, obviously.
Right.
But if you can see that now, you've got your questioning dogma, and now you've got excitement, but it's tempered with wisdom, because zeal without wisdom can just run you amok.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Or absolutely. Wisdom without zeal can be stuck. So.
Right.
We're putting all these together. And then the fourth horse is the pale horse that you referred to with Clint Eastwood. And it represents the end of sense consciousness. So this is essentially letting go of our addictions, of our bad habits, of any negative thoughts and attitudes that we have, hanging on to grudges. It's letting go. It's releasing all of those things. That's what the pale horse represents.
So tie for me together, if you will, I get the four horses, but the apocalypse word tends to have that emotional charge that it's the explosion, it's the end, it's time gone as we know it.
Yeah, that's the perfect place to go with this. And, yeah, the apocalypse, if there's any apocalypse, and there will be, it's not an external world stage global catastrophe. The apocalypse metaphysically is simply referring to your current level of egocentric consciousness, which is become subordinate to your higher level of Christ consciousness. It's when the ego, your ego, your human self, becomes subordinated to your higher spiritual self. That's it. The apocalypse is for the ego's control. The ego's rulership over your life ends.
And that's your higher self wins out.
Yeah, that's the apocalypse, when the ego loses its rulership, and then your spiritual nature rules your thoughts and your decisions, etc. So Armageddon's the same thing. Armageddon takes place between your ears. Doesn't take place between countries. It takes place between your ears, because it's about your consciousness changing from one level of perspective to a higher, more Christed level of perspective.
Now, in the time that we have in this segment, the next, symbol would be the seven-headed dragon. So we've gone from horses to dragons. I'm seeing Game of Thrones right now, and these dragons flying around, and it's got, okay, so talk to us about that.
And what's so cool about Revelation, really, these images, I mean, it's a very image-dramatic book.
Oh, no kidding.
All the symbols. And you think about when kids are learning to read, they don't have a few words and lots of pictures to help them. And that's really what Revelation is all about, because it's a concept of enlightenment, which is way beyond where most of us are. And so we need a lot of vivid imagery to help us. So that's why these are so powerful and so vivid in their description. Mm-hmm. So here's the seven-headed beast, the dragon.
Yeah, the seven-headed beast or dragon, yeah.
Ten horns, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, that's important. I remind your listeners again that what we're talking about are traits, qualities, characteristics, talents, abilities, inclinations within each of us.
Okay.
So that's what the seven-headed beast is referring to. So the seven heads represent the seven deadly sins. Envy, gluttony, greed, lust, pride, sloth, wrath, etc. The 10 horns on the beast represent the 10 expressions of unconditional love. And for those who may be interested, that's according to St. John of the Cross. And they can get, they can look up the those 10 major expressions. As a matter of fact, it's in St. John's 16th century book called The Dark Night of the Souls, where they can find them. I have them listed in the book, of course, in the end notes. There's seven crowns. I'm going to ask your listeners to once again, they might want to double fasten their seatbelt on this one because...
Okay, now we've got about a minute before a break, so just let me give you that. Okay.
Thank you. The seven crowns are the represent the seven churches that Revelation talks about, but the seven churches represent our seven spiritual energy centers that run along our spine, and they come from our etheric or vital body, and they stand for the seven major chakras, and I've borrowed that from the Hindu philosophy system. There are actually 42 chakras in all, but these are the seven main chakras that run along our spinal column, which happens to be the narrow way, if you will, toward spiritual enlightenment.
Now, this is really fascinating. Before we go to break, we've got about 1 minute. I want to ask a really simple question that might be a complex answer, but everything you've explained starts to really make much more intelligent and logical sense to connect with. And I'm very thankful for that. But we started, one of the comments is to let go of dogma, right? The white horse. So if that's the case, it sure seems that the way the book was written not only didn't get us away from dogma, it actually tied us into it.
Yes, by design.
Okay.
Yeah, most definitely by design, because fundamental religion, basically any religion, not just Christianity, is meant for control and for conformity, and the more a sacred writing can attest to that conformity and get the believers thinking in a certain way, so that they can perpetuate that particular religion, that particular pocket, as Cher mentioned earlier. That's what's in it for that particular religion.
Wow. Okay, I'm gonna have to cogitate on that during the break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk about a variety of things. The book is The Book of Revelation, New Metaphysical Version. My guests are Reverend Bill and Cher Holton, and I am thrilled to have you guys here. This is absolutely a blast to be able to talk about and to bring a different perspective to light. So stick with us on Straight Talk Radio. This is Chuck Gallagher. We'll be right back. The Book of Revelation, New Metaphysical Version, is what we're talking about here on Straight Talk Radio. This is Chuck Gallagher, and my guests are Bill and Cher Holton. And Bill is the author of this new book, and we have been talking about the Book of Revelation in a way that I have never heard it explained, and in a way that makes so much sense. We've talked about all kinds of symbols, but if there is one symbol that probably most folk, at least in the United States, are aware of, it's the mark of the beast. It's the 666 stamped on your forehead, bringing you into making sure that everybody is numbered and we're all part of this uniformity somehow. And at least for those that teach the book in a dogmatic way, you don't want the number. So talk to me about that so I can understand it.
Yeah, this is really cool because that has been such a frightful thing that people are afraid when they draw a number and it's got 666 in it.
Oh, yeah.
Phone companies have trouble getting rid of phone numbers that have 666 in them. And yet, really what it means from a metaphysical perspective is it represents us forgetting the truth of who we really are. It's actually the number of man. And we have scientific, and throughout the book, I want to make a point on this book that Bill has actually, half the book is endnotes. It's very thoroughly researched, and he's done a lot of scientific support for it as well. And there is scientific support behind this number 666, which I'm going to let him explain because he's the one who's into the science. But it's really cool. Remember what it stands for, the symbol of man, forgetting the truth of who we are.
Yeah, number 666 is the number of the beast within us, which is our ego, of course, our unenlightened, divinity-denying ego. It was first noted in an old manuscript form called De Textus Receptus, written in about 55 to 68-ish A.D., and it was an encoded reference believed to be about Nehru, but it means more than that. In the Kabbalistic Judaism, 666 is a number which represents the creation and perfection of the world. Now, what's interesting about that is the world that 666 is talking to is not the external world, not the universe, not planet Earth, but the world of our body. And what's interesting about that is that carbon 12 is the basis of all known life. We are carbon beings, and carbon 12 consists of 6 protons, 6 neutrons, and 6 electrons. 666. So it's describing our physical body. That's why it's the number of man, because it's our physical body. And by the way, for those who may be interested, there was a fragment found. It's called Papyrus 115, discovered at Oxford University, that gives the number of the beast as 616, not 666. And this fragment is the oldest manuscript about 17,000 years ago of Revelation 13, which is where the 666 appears, and it's led some scholars to conclude that 616 is the original number of the beast, which is interesting. The other scientific reference that we promised has to do with chapter 7 in Revelation, verse 9, and I'll read it very quickly. I'll read the metaphysical first. We don't have time to do that. Okay.
Yeah, Sherry's cracking a whip, yeah, Bill. She's cracking a whip, buddy.
Yes, it has to. But anyway, it's talking about ourselves. It mentions about the 12 tribes of Israel. It mentions about the great multitude, the nations, kindreds, that kind of thing. We have interpreted that as meaning the cells in our bodies. Our body has over 90 billion cells in our brain and over 100 trillion cells in our body. So we believe the multitude that the nations that Revelation is talking about, because again, everything is internal to us, is talking about ourselves, and not about nations out there anywhere, if you will. And there's evidence to support that. So,
and a lot of the neuroscience research now is really talking about how important those cells are and how we can retrain our brain with our thinking. And that's what enlightenment is all about, is creating whole new brain paths.
And so the book, very, very quickly, it identifies the 7 major spiritual centers represented by the 7 churches. It also talks about what their function is. And then it also talks about what happens when they blossom or when they are opened by us through disciplined spiritual study, through prayer and through meditation, through affirmations, through visualizing our good, through spiritual practices. And when we get to that level of spiritual attainment, if you will, our body becomes very spiritualized. Eventually, we believe every human being at some point, depending upon your spiritual development, will have the same type of body that the Christ as Jesus had in his ascension, where we can essentially walk through doors, walk through walls. We think that that was a hint of what would happen to us that's included in that. So it all comes together, we hope, as a manual, if you will, of our own individual spiritual development.
Bill, you took a number of years to write the book. And I don't think anybody that's listening to the show would argue that you've taken a complex writing and have really worked to make it more understandable in a way that is applicable with the metaphysical version. But what was your goal in doing this in the first place?
I'd have to say that my goal is to get people to see the necessity of defriending dogma, moving out of the dogmatic box, opening their hearts and minds to a more broadband view of their spirituality, and growing spiritually, using the practices I talk about, so that we can become more self-realized. And by self, I mean capital S self-realized. We have a small s self, our human self, and a capital S self, our divine self, our spiritual self. And for humankind to be able to move toward the capital S self-realization, and if we do that, we will achieve the peace on earth that we all talk about. If we do that, you won't hear the news like we all hear every day about what's going on negatively. So that's what I hope to gain by this, to help people to realize who they really are, a spiritual being walking earth in human form.
How do people get your book?
Oh, they can get the book through our website, which is www.yourspiritualpractice.com. They can go there, or they can go on Amazon. It's also there.
Okay. So the Book of Revelation, New Metaphysical Version, at yourspiritualself.com.
Spiritual practice.
Yourspiritualpractice.com. yourspiritualpractice.com. Or you can go to Amazon.com, the place where it seems all books are purchased these days, and get your copy of the Book of Revelation. Bill, share, this has been so enlightening. I want to applaud you before we end the program. It is true. Today you hear all kinds of things on the news. Of course, today you hear things that 100 years ago we never would have heard, because we didn't have the ability to have mass communication the way we do today. And that might lead some to believe that things are worse than they've ever been. But I can't help but believe that when someone like you take the time to explain and allow us to evolve into the people who we truly are and move past the illusion that our ego creates, we can't help but move into a better world.
Thank you. I agree.
Thank you. And we want to say to people, never confuse yourself with your network.
Oh, I like that.
And as you're growing in your spiritual enlightenment, you'll realize the power of that.
Right. The book is the Book of Revelation, New Metaphysical Version. I would encourage you to pick up a copy of the book, read it, delve into it, and understand better what we've spent the time talking about. My guests have been Bill and Cher Holton. Thank you so much for your time. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. And as I say in every segment that we have, every choice has a consequence. And certainly the consequences of reading this book will create a different place for you to look and to understand who you really are and the spiritual being that you have been blessed to be. Bill, Cher, thank you so much for being with us. This is Chuck Gallagher, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Tune in each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com each Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher.